Special guest joining me right now, former United States Navy submarine captain. That means this gentleman, at one point in time in his career, was one of the most powerful men on the planet. Let's welcome Jim Nault. Jim, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on again.
Quickly, just tell everybody a little bit about your background and the websites that you're here to talk about today.
Yeah, so after I retired from the Navy about 15 years ago, I went to law school, of all things, got my law degree, was a litigator for quite some time, worked up in Hartford, worked for a couple of federal judges, and just recently I joined this outfit called Legal Insurrection. And it is kind of a two-headed beast. One side, there's a website, a blog that everybody should read called legalinsurrection.com. You can go there. There's a lot of hard-hitting news analysis, what's going on with the current administration. I think a lot of people would find that very enlightening. The other piece that just started recently is Legal Insurrection is now a foundation, so it's a nonprofit. And that foundation has started an outfit called the Equal Protection Project. And the Equal Protection Project is what you can find at equalprotect.org, is an outfit that basically looks and does investigations into blatant racism, which we are finding is cropping up more and more these days, sometimes under the facade of something people may have heard of called equity. As you know, the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, says no state shall deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. The Civil Rights Act said that, no person can be discriminated against by any entity that receives any federal funding. And for decades, that hasn't been an issue since Brown versus Board of Education back in the 50s. You know, schools were desegregated. You know, nobody would dare discriminate. But these days, we're finding that that is happening more and more now. For instance, just to give you three examples real quick. Providence School District in Providence, Rhode Island, has a program, great program for new teachers. You get hired on as a teacher in the Providence Public School District. They will pay your student loans off. Whatever student loans you've incurred, they'll pay them off.
All right.
There's only one catch. You can't be white.
Is that real?
That is real. And we have filed a complaint with the Rhode Island Human Rights Commission. They actually referred our complaint to the U.S. Equal Opportunity Commission, who is now reviewing our complaint. And they will.
That's how it's written?
That's how it's written. And they it's all over their website. And they are very proud of this program.
Wow.
And so the EEOC will either shut the program down or they'll tell us, hey, you know, you may have a case here. We're too busy. You handle it. In which case we will, the Equal Protection Project will take action. And our motto is investigate, educate, and litigate.
Okay.
And so we'll do whatever it takes to shut this down because it's blatantly unconstitutional, we think.
Yeah.
And, we'll see if a court agrees with us, which we think they will.
Is that the whole state of Rhode Island or just
Providence Public School District?
Okay.
Another example, Albany Public Library.
Yeah.
Which is an entity of the city of Albany,
right,
which last year got $81 million in federal funding.
Okay.
They have an intern program. Every year they hire two interns under this special library intern program, people that just graduated from graduate library programs around the country.
Okay.
Open to everybody, unless you're white. So we have just sent them a letter, a cease and desist letter, basically explaining to them why this is improper.
Right.
And we're meeting with them later this week, actually, to discuss it.
Is that how it's, I keep going back to this, but I'm trying to sort of grasp it in the big picture because I know listeners out there are probably furious. Black and white listeners, I would think, are furious because they should be. Is the terminology written where don't come and be part of this if you're white?
No. So this is, in both instances, these are all, the facilities are open to everybody.
Yeah.
Schools are open to everybody, obviously. It's just they're seeing these specific programs crop up.
Right.
That are seemingly blatantly discriminatory.
Okay.
And so that's what we're investigating. And then there's another one in Missouri, of all places. Missouri State University has a business school. And as part of their business school, they do small business accelerator programs. So if you have a small business, you start a website or whatever, you want to go in, they can do marketing for you. They'll show you how to build your website, do all this kind of stuff. You just can't be white. And so we've sent a letter to the Missouri Attorney General And hopefully he will take action on that. And, you know, the other thing that we say is, you know, the remedy for racism is never more racism.
Of course.
And so we are going to look into that. And in the, I should make one final point. You know, we would be happy and will fight any kind of racism.
Right.
It is not, you know, we're not only doing this for one group. If we find it against anyone, anywhere, anytime right. in the United States of America, we'll take action.
Are you still finding that? We have, you know, I feel calls on this show all the time about how there's racism still out there. And it would be ignorant to think that there aren't people out there who are racist still to this day. But right. I believe, I've always believed this, that as every day passes, racism is slowly being eliminated. The culture is changing radically for the better. Do you run into a lot of racism challenges across the country right now with your group?
Well, as I mentioned, those three examples I think are clearly there.
Right.
And we're afraid that they're just the tip of the iceberg. And
but even flip it around. I mean, most people think when they think of racism, they think, all right, someone's discriminatory against the black person or an Asian person or, you know, Hispanic. Are you running into that still out there?
Well, there was just there is actually a United States Supreme Court case that's pending right now against Harvard University and the University of North Carolina, where they were, you know, the big fight is over whether they can use race for admissions.
Right.
And the evidence, I was just looking at this earlier this week, the evidence seems to be pretty compelling that Harvard, and, you know, we'll see what the Supreme Court says. So,
right.
the, you know, guys smarter than me, seem to be penalizing Asian Americans who were applying to Harvard.
Yeah. Too smart, I guess. All right. What website do you want to drive folks to learn about the racism aspect?
They go to equalprotect.org.
Okay. And the other website that you're here to talk a little bit about is Legal Insurrection. Tell folks a little bit more in detail about that.
So Legal Insurrection is a blog that's been around for 15 years. I do a lot of military posting on that. And one of the things that I've been looking into pretty extensively is the aid that we've given to Ukraine over the last year. And when you look at the numbers, well, there's a couple pieces to it, but just to look at the, some of the raw numbers, we've given over $46 billion in military aid to Ukraine so far, over $76 billion total with humanitarian aid and financial assistance. And I wanted to dial in, if we have time, to go into the actual, some of the weapons that we've given to Ukraine.
Yeah, please do.
So we've given Ukraine over 1.5 million rounds of 155-millimeter howitzer ammunition. We've given them over 1,600 Stinger anti-air missiles, representing, by the way, over one-third of our active inventory of Stinger missiles. We've given them over 8,500 Javelin anti-tank missiles, which also represents over one-third of our active frontline inventory of Javelin anti-tank missiles, over 5,200 Excalibur precision anti-tank missiles. And here's the kicker. To replace those Stinger missiles in our inventory, it's going to take over 13 years to replace that. Over 7 years for the Excalibur missile, over 5 years for the Javelin missile, and 3 to 4 years for the howitzer rounds. And, you know, this isn't just me talking about this. I mean, independent, very smart military analysts, and I quote these in the two articles that I wrote on legalinsurrection.com, have called this, quote, insufficient, you know, our munition stockpiles, quote, precarious, quote, dangerous. And even two Biden administration officials, one called it uncomfortably low, and the other one said that it's not a critical issue for us right now because we're not in a shooting war. But if we were, it would be a critical issue on day one.
Amazing.
I mean, it seems to me that we're kind of putting ourselves at risk.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, and I'm no lover of Vladimir Putin, believe me.
Right.
I'm not sure that there's any justification for him going into Ukraine the way he has. But, you know, we have to kind of balance what we're doing with our own needs
and right.
Things like that. And here's the key. If you look at some of the quotes from General Milley, who is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and some of the other Biden administration officials, he's quoted as saying, we will do, quote, whatever it takes. We will be there for as long as they need us to be. And I'm thinking to myself, well, what if this war lasts another 5 years?
Right.
What if it lasts, who knows how long, 10
right.
years? Like, what are we going to have left? And when you think about this, one of the issues that's come up is the whole Taiwan defense issue that's been in the news a lot lately. Taiwan itself has orders that they are ready, willing, and able to pay for to U.S. defense contractors for $19 billion worth of weapons to defend themselves against a China invasion that they can't get because our defense contractors are so strapped with all the weapons they're trying to make for us to replenish our stockpiles for Ukraine. And the other thing is, there's a lot of strategy going on. You know, how would Taiwan defend itself, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we've pledged to help them do that somehow.
Right.
Well, how are we going to do that? Well, there's this thing called the, I hadn't heard of it until I started digging into this, called the, quote, porcupine strategy. We're not going to send over armored divisions, and we're not going to send over, you know, a million troops. We're going to give them missiles, right? And these missiles are going to be like a porcupine. China tries to invade with the anti-air missiles. They're going to take out all their aircraft. The anti-ship missiles are going to take out their ships. You know, the anti-tank missiles are going to take any take out any tanks they land. Well, if we give them all to Ukraine, the porcupine's going to be short a few quills.
Right.
You know, so maybe that's not the best strategy.
Jim Nault, United States, retired United States Navy captain. We were talking about Ukraine and all of the money and the equipment that we've sent over there. You're a smart guy. You're a military guy. If I'm looking at this from 30,000 feet up and I'm thinking to myself, okay, we have elected leaders, we have administrations, we actually have military personnel who are supposed to be smart. So either they're ignorant to this or they are purposely manipulating the system to bring about a downfall of the United States of America. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of them are well-intentioned, that, you know, they want to help somebody that's been invaded. And, you know, I'm totally good with that. You know, we've provided intelligence assistance around the globe to countries that need it, you know, train their troops. In fact, I'm pretty sure we've done that in Ukraine as well. But I can't speak to the Biden administration people who are pulling a string's motivations. I don't know.
Right.
They certainly aren't squawking about why they're doing it. But one of the other points I want to bring up was, think about what we could do in this country with $76 billion. I mean, you think about the veteran homeless problem and, you know, the drug problem and all of the other things we could fix with that money. And it's, you know, you got to wonder, are we doing the right thing exactly?
Nobody would mortgage their own future or their own security to help out someone else, like literally mortgage your own, depleting your resources to the point where you can't defend yourself. No sane person would do that. All right, so let me change gears before we run out of time. I wanted to make sure we got to this transgender issue. You've got an interesting take on it and an interesting look on it. I want you to tell everybody about this.
So I published an article on Monday in legalinsurrection.com that people can go and find. They can just go there and scroll down, or they can put my name in, N-A-U-L-T, and they'll find it. And it was a kind of a disturbing article that I ran across. And I did some more digging and found some more information. And then I found a video. And here's the issue. Four military doctors, I believe they were associated with the Air Force, at Travis Air Force Base, one at Walter Reed, actually, published an article in the American Journal of Public Health.
Right.
And they said that military people who have children, who obviously are seen by military doctors, if those children have any, you know, gender dysmorphia issues, in other words, they are confused about their gender, or they think they're of one gender, but they think maybe they're of another gender, that military doctors should immediately start transgender treatment, puberty blockers and other drugs and other things to help these kids change their gender. And they went so far as to say that any military professional who would, quote, pause that kind of treatment and kind of take a step back and, you know, help the child figure out what they, if they're really serious about that or not, that's unethical. And I'm reading this article and I'm thinking to myself, geez, I used to be a military parent for, you know, 18 years until my kid went to college. And then, you know, my daughter was delivered by Army doctors. And I'm kind of getting scared by this article. And then I found this video online as I was digging into this more of a Navy training that occurred in Bahrain, which is the Navy headquarters in the Middle East.
Right.
And there's this Navy health professional lady who gets on stage and she tells the assembled Navy people that they no longer have access to their child's medical record online once their child reaches 12 years old, that the policy's been that way for at least 6 years, And if their child comes into the Navy clinic in Bahrain and tells the people there that they have mental health issues or they have gender issues, that the Navy hospital there is not going to tell the parents. And there's a guy in the video who pipes up and he says, wait, when did this start? I didn't know this.
Right.
And he said that he was furious. And I would be, too, if I was him. And I have no idea. She claimed that that was, quote, big Navy policy. I don't know if that's true. I don't know what the policy is here at the sub base in Groton.
Right.
But what I would say is that if you're a parent, even if you're a military parent, you need to be watching your military or civilian doctors that treat your kids like a hawk. And you need to talk to them and find out what they're going to disclose to you that your kid tells them and what they won't, if right. anything. And I'll tell you this. If the Navy policy, when I was raising my daughter, when me and my wife were raising our daughter, was that she could go into the clinic or the Navy hospital and they weren't going to tell me that what problems she had,
right?
Or dovetailing this back to these four military doctors who published this in this journal, if they were going to start treating her without telling me,
right?
I would have resigned my officer's commission that day,
right?
If I found out that that was happening. Right. So people need to dig into this,
yeah.
Figure out what the policy is, and then do what they think is right for their kids.
Jim Nault, United States submarine captain, retired. You know, you retired prior to the submarine force going co-ed, but let's take it a step further. How would it go if you were the captain of a boat and you had to deal with someone and their gender dysphoria and them being a transgender on board?
I have no idea.
Well, that's an honest answer. And that's all we can ask for. We got to go. James Nault. Retired United States Navy captain. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.